You know, with the infrequency we start doing these, we get on a roll and then someone gets sick or there's an overnight or there's a hungover Sunday. And this stuff doesn't get done.
Yeah.
But we're here now. Welcome to the Soderstrom Bubble. I'm Scotty Waz. That's Gen HL History Girl. And we're back from a little mini hiatus because things happen. Life happens. It's Christmas time. The holiday season is upon us. And boy, howdy, could we not be any less caring. This week, we'll talk about some things and some stuff and some things and some stuff to do with the history of hockey, including an anniversary date, a salty player, and a farewell to our buddy, a farewell to a referee, and a farewell, a not-so-solemn farewell.
Yes.
To our buddy.
Yes.
So we'll start off with, I don't know where you want to start. You have this thing planned out. We'll planogram with you. I'll just add barbs here and there. Not my mom, but things here and there.
Okay, so the first thing that happened, granted this happened like a week and a half ago, was Mick Magoo died. Mm-hmm. Longtime referee, 26 years, I believe. He's the one, if you go back and you look at clips of the NHL, he's the one who's waving off goals and he's waving his arm frantically and he's got like one leg stuck out in front of him, like some sort of demented traffic controller. That's Mick Magoo.
He was what's his name? Who's the guy now who does all the over the top calls? He's like the let me look this up because it's going to bug me the entire time. You know, the guy who's everyone's like, oh, he's so great. And he's just trying to go into business for himself.
Yeah, that's about the only negative thing people really had to say about Magoo is that he was he kind of made himself the show with the way he made these big dramatic calls.
Wes McCauley.
Yeah.
Wes McCauley makes himself the show.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you go back and watch games and there's some referee, like, waving his arms psychotically and kicking a leg in the air,
I mean,
that's Mick.
That's fine during the course of play.
Yeah.
Walkham has, like, this lead-up and this whole intro and just this whole thing that I don't enjoy.
Oh, McCauley?
Yeah, Wes McCauley, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Wes McCauley just I'm not a...
Two things about Mick, notable things, is the 2006 Game 3, he's famous for blowing that no-goal call for Carolina.
Okay.
And he is also famous for... I don't know if you can go online and you can see it. It's Curtis Joseph going nuts.
Oh yeah,
knocking
that one.
Over a referee. Mm-hmm. That is also a playoff moment, and that was Mick as well.
And yeah, Cujo got knocked over a couple of times, and he still called it a good goal for Ottawa.
he just kind of lost his mind, charged at Magoo. I think he said he wanted to talk to him. And you can see that he sort of lost his footing and slid into him. But
yeah,
it almost looks like he tackled him.
Like drop kicked him in the legs.
Yeah, and he got a game misconduct for it.
Yeah, so. Even an incidental contact of the official is abusive official. So.
Yeah, so good guy. He lots of stories, always a storyteller and always helping out with referee camps wherever they asked him to. So.
Yeah, one of the guys who really wanted, like, a future for people. He wanted to. He didn't get into it for himself. He didn't put himself over it. Like, I mean, Carey Fraser, you can say, made himself like put himself over anyone else rather than giving back to the refereeing community and trying to grow people up and stuff like that.
And Mick was forever at like a junior game and be like, "Hey, nice game. Next time, watch this and this."
Right.
You know? And he would just do it just because he was there, you know, and a lot of guys wouldn't do that. And you could say, "Hey, we're running a referee camp. Could you, you know, send us a video or something?" And he'd show up.
Mm-hmm.
And spend a day telling them stories and
yeah. And for a lot of people, like, even if they got deaf, I mean, to have that's pretty cool. Like, just to have that moment and everything like that, you know?
Yeah, he was a very giving guy. Mm-hmm. So.
So young, 62.
Yeah.
Woof.
Yeah. Irreversible damage from a stroke. A clot in the brain. Stroke, yeah.
Stinks.
Yeah.
Stinks, stinks, stinks. But we'll have the stories to tell for it. All right. Onward, upward. Now, so you told me before the show, hey, listen, stupid, I've got something. Maybe your little kind of non-hockey brain can wrap around it. As you were wearing your fur robe, walking down the hallway to get to the studio. And by fur robe, I mean, let's call him Hartsy, Cooperall, as he tries to jump and attack you and get on your shoulders for a piggyback ride. So this is the 13th coming up here. So Thursday is the anniversary of what?
The moment that started the All-Star Game tradition.
So the ballot. People putting their ballots in the old way, and then you had the Chads there, where I would steal like 15 handfuls because it was so cool, and vote Ally Afraidy and Peter Bondurin. Like that was the tradition that we're talking about? Is that it?
Oh, if only. So people don't realize anymore is that before there was an official NHL All-Star Game, there were a couple of unofficial ones, and they were mostly fundraisers for players' families because there was no players' fund, there was no emergency fund, there was
no union.
There was nothing.
Yeah.
It was you played, you worked, or you were out of luck. So this is 1933, Boston Garden, Eddie Shore is involved.
Mm. Shock me.
And the other player involved is a Leafs player named Ace Bailey, not to be confused with the Ace Bailey who died in 9/11. People ask me, you know, are they related? No, they just happen to have the same nickname and last name. Mm-hmm. So Ace Bailey was a forward, and Eddie Shore is just a bad-tempered SOB, to put it mildly. And what happened was another player, I want to say Brett Horner, had tripped up Eddie, shoved him, and gone on his merry way. And Eddie Shore didn't really see who got him. He just saw red, or blue in this case, and just train wrecks.
Well, no, he didn't see red. He saw Ace. Because red was the one who did it.
Yeah, he saw Ace He didn't see that Red was the one who did it, but he saw Ace, and Shore just basically, like, railroaded him from behind, like, just plow, and nobody wore helmets. So Ace went up into the air, fell backwards, and landed on his head. And he's like, just out. Unconscious. And the scary thing is he's unconscious and he's like twitching.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this very, very scary moment, and they stretcher him off. And the accounts at the time are kind of crazy because the ambulance attendants were like pinching his hand and slapping him in an effort to like wake him up or keep him alive or something.
Keep him breathing, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean they were constantly like pinching him and slapping him, and I'm like, this does not seem like good medical protocol, but okay, whatever.
It's the 30s. It was a different time then.
So they rush him to the hospital, and the specialists take x-rays of him, and they said that his brain was bruised, which is indicative of massive, massive force.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot to bruise your brain. Like, you get a concussion, that's some brain damage. But when you actually literally bruise your brain, that's some serious damage. They said he had a torn brain tissue, which I don't know what they mean by that. Fractured skull, and he had clots forming. There's a layer of tissue between the brain and the skull. And he had clots
Maybe that was the tissue that was torn.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they were talking about...
Or the perforation of the brain, kind of almost lobotomy-esque.
Yeah, I really don't know what they mean by torn brain.
Torn tissue on the brain.
Yeah, because it's hard to see torn tissue of the brain, because the brain is so dense that you mm-hmm. wouldn't be able to see it in an x-ray.
And especially in that era either.
Yeah.
Where an x-ray takes 4 hours.
Yeah, so they said he was going to die. Like, they, at the hospital, they're like, listen, we can do what we can do, but he's basically going to die. Like, there's just too much. And then, of course, with all of the brain trauma, his brain swelled. He had to undergo, like, spinal taps, basically, to drain all of the extra fluid, like, repeated. So, I mean, it was really, really serious. It was so serious that homicide detectives showed up at Eddie Shore's house to interview him.
He wasn't even dead yet.
Yeah.
How is it a homicide at that point? Like, does he have to be dead, or is it just...
No. Like, they could have charged him with attempted homicide if they wanted at this point. And maybe they just wanted to get his statement before he lawyered up or whatever. I don't know. But anyway...
Eddie Shore doesn't seem the guy to me to lawyer up. He'd be his own defense, honestly.
He'd just tackle
and walk out. Walk out before the ruling, and just say, "I won," and then leave.
Yeah. And then the detective told the Montreal Gazette, which is one of the biggest papers at the time, that they already had arrest warrant ready in case Bailey didn't survive. So I mean, they were. It was that vicious, that uncalled for, that the police were already, like, ready to be involved.
That's something that, if you can find that in the archives, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Like.
Yeah. So, he survives. Ace survived. And, there's some other things that kind of crazy went on, that went on when they were trying to stretcher him off the ice. Conn Smythe actually punched a couple of fans
Jesus.
In the stands because he was trying to get down to ice level and they were in his way. The reporters were fighting outside the Leafs dressing room. One of them got punched in the face, broke his glasses. I mean, there was a lot of, like, craziness going on right then and there. And in the meantime, Shore was arrested, or no, Conn Smythe was arrested for assault and battery.
Well, yeah, no crap. Like, at that point, so, I mean, obviously
so
he did.
One of your star players is in the hospital. You don't know if he's alive or dead or anything.
At any given hour.
Yeah. Eddie Shore is at home, wondering if he just killed a man. There's a homicide detective at his door.
I'm sure.
Conn Smythe, you know, in the pokey.
I'm sure Eddie Shore is, if I killed another man. Like, let's be honest here.
Yeah, and the thing is, that, like, everyone went into sort of, like, damage mode right after. Like, Conn Smythe said, well, I don't blame Shore for the accident. You know, he's... And this one is a little bit much. He's one of the finest sportsmen I ever met. Shore has been used so much, I doubt he fully realized what he was doing when he knocked down Bailey last night. I would argue that he knew damn
he
well
knew.
What he was doing.
You don't just, what happened there?
And then, so Ace Bailey's father is back home in their hometown. He hears over the radio. What happens? He gets a phone call. He'd been having a few beers during the game, which is natural. Mm-hmm. He grabbed a 45.
Was it brimful of ash on the 45?
And by 45, I don't mean like a 40. I mean
you mean a caliber, not a
I
record.
I mean a caliber, not a
not brimful of ash on the 45.
Yeah, no.
Everybody needs a bosom for a pillow. No.
No, he grabbed a revolver and got on
Velvet Revolver 45.
And he got on the train. And so then Conn Smythe gets wind of it. He's released from jail. on bail, and then met Ace Bailey's dad at the train station, bought him a drink, slipped him some sleeping pills, stole his gun, and put him back on the train to Canada.
That's the weirdest episode of SVU ever.
It's so odd. So Shore got suspended indefinitely. Red Horner got suspended indefinitely, which is weird because, like, sure, he's the one who started it, but it wasn't a...
He didn't get involved.
It wasn't his... I mean, he didn't do anything out of the ordinary. It was a little push, a little shove, a little trip. It was just normal. Mm-hmm. So I don't see why Red Horner was at all... But anyway, so he survived. And in the meantime, Eddie Shore is getting telegrams from places like Edmonton. And they're like these big, long telegrams saying, you know, we believe in you, Eddie, you know, all the best. And it's got like 500 citizen names. And he's getting these from like all over the country. And so Bailey's recovering. Slowly, he couldn't sit for, or he couldn't stand for a while, and then he learned to restand, to walk again, and all of this. After a little while, he was able to eat solid food again, you know, all of this. So he was never ever able to play again, and it became this thing where it was very obvious he was disabled. He wasn't able to, he had some memory impairments. His balance wasn't always the greatest. He had the skull fracture, you know. So it was obvious he was disabled and unable to play again. And at the time, the men were the breadwinner of the family. And the league said, well, this is a horrible thing. You know, what can we do? Hey, let's have an all-star game. And so what they did is they had they held the game, and then rather than skating out in the all-star sweaters, they had a table, and Ace stood there and handed everyone their sweater and shook their hand. And it came time for him to give Eddie Shore the sweater. And the two men, like, shook hands and, like, did, like, the manly shoulder pat that they do instead of a hug. And the whole place lost it. And that's the story of how they started the All-Star game.
So, when all said and done, what was the suspension time for Shore? Do you have that offhand?
I do not have it offhand. I think it was only, like, 2 weeks.
So, in, like, that time span for that day and age, it could have been, like, 4 games.
Yeah. It wasn't that long.
Kind of insane. Kind of murdering a guy. Yeah, back in the day, 4 games.
Wait, here it is. No, technically he was suspended for 16 games in total.
Okay.
So.
Which, again, in a 48 game season, that's pretty huge.
Yeah, and even though Bailey said publicly, like, I forgive him, mm-hmm. you know, it's done and over with, I'm recovering, Shore tried to visit Bailey in the hospital, and he wasn't allowed to.
Oh, no, of course not. He's... Nurses are probably thinking he's trying to finish the job.
Yeah. I mean, he was very contrite. Like, he was very... reports of the time were that he was very, very upset, very nervous, very, like...
Sure. I'm sure you, when you try to get, like, kind of a little bit of retaliation, you don't expect to... Like, flip a guy.
Accidentally try to kill a guy.
Ass over tea kettle, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't seem to be a thing.
Yeah, and there were other things that the Bruins tried to do to help out. They had played a game against the Maroons, and they donated the full gate receipts to Ace Bailey's family. It still wasn't enough. And... Because, I mean, he had these really high medical bills because, obviously, you know, it took a lot of rehab and things. And so that's how they came together for the game.
Don't really see that nowadays, any kind of benefit. Well, a little bit of benefit games, but not not to this.
Mostly it's all time. It's like the old timers doing the benefit games, sure, more so than the current players.
Mm-hmm. So.
So that is the absolutely weird, wacky, and wild story.
75 years, is it? 85?
33 would be
85 years? Yeah. Wow. 85 years since that incident. Holy hell.
Yeah. They raised the equivalent of almost $375,000. $375,000. Almost the same.
Which, working in the medical industry, that sounds about right for recovering costs like that. Want to stay like that. So.
Yeah.
So there we go. There's the origin story of why there was an All-Star game. And away we go. Now we go to our forgotten player of the week, and this is a guy who people say he's forgotten, Jen. Say he's forgotten, but low many years ago, D4L made a song about him. Get that lava-dava, lava-dava.
I don't know why I put up with you.
I don't know either. Tell us about our unknown player of the week.
All right. Our unknown player of the week is the first American-born player to really stick in the NHL. There were a couple before him. They only played a handful of games. Clarence, nicknamed Taffy, Abel, A-B-E-L.
I get it because he's stuck with it.
Was the first to really make a career of it. First American-born player to make a career of it.
From?
He is from Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan.
Oh, that's too close to Canada.
He didn't start playing until he was 18.
Interesting.
For the time, he was a really huge guy. He was a 6'1", 225.
Jesus Christ.
So for the time, he was a monster.
Yeah. He was Chara.
Yeah. So, of course, naturally, he became a defenseman.
Yeah.
And he started out in the USAHA and earned himself a spot on the 1924 Winter Olympic team. And even though he was never really an offensive player, he somehow managed to score 15 goals.
Hmm. The first offensive defenseman.
Well, but this was only in the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
So he caught some attention naturally. So this was 1924. 1926, the New York Rangers signed him and then paired him with a guy who has a terrible nickname, Irvin Ching Johnson. They thought he looked sort of Chinese, so they called him Ching.
Oh.
Yes.
That's the kind of racism I love.
It just kills me to call him Ching Johnson. anyway.
I wish his first name was Charlie. And they call him Cha Ching. He made the money. See, it works better that way.
It was almost like a Legion of Doom, but defensively. Because they were
so like a Twin Tower kind of situation.
Yeah, two big guys that would just run over everybody. Just intimidation.
The Bash Brothers. We're talking Dean Portman and Fulton Reed right now.
Kind of, yeah. They were very physical, very intimidating, a little mean-spirited. They won the cup, and they were the defensemen who were instrumental. Okay, so you know the whole story about Lester Patrick having to play in goal? Mm-hmm. They were the defensemen that were instrumental.
Oh, see, then that doesn't make it that great. Like, if they were back there.
Yeah, they were the defensemen
that doesn't,
holding the line.
Then
so
that's
that,
garbage.
Yeah, so that Patrick didn't have to really face any shots. Apparently, they only allowed 3 shots on goal the entire time that Patrick was in net.
So, you know, that lore means nothing now. Like, now hearing this, it doesn't mean a goddamn thing.
It sort of does, but sort of not. I don't know. It's
It does for the story, but then when you have two behemoths back there defending you.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing's going to get through. Are you kidding me?
So then, weirdly, they sold him to the Blackhawks for $15,000. Now, $15,000 in 1929 is a lot of money.
Yeah, because the Depression just happened.
So he played there 5 years there. He won a cup in 34 with them. Very much a stay-at-home defenseman, very popular with the fans, probably because he was so...
Gentle giant almost, or...?
Probably because of his hits, like the way he hit a guy.
Yeah.
It sort of got them out of
folk hero thing.
Yeah, yeah. So... he finished his career, like I said, not offensive giant. 18 goals, 18 assists, 359 penalty minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Over how many seasons?
Let's see.
Or even how many games?
Eight seasons with the NHL. And then after that, he tried his best to be a coach and manager, kind of went, "This is really not for me," and went back home and opened a resort called Taffy's Lodge, and then became one of the charter members of the United States Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Good for Taffy.
So.
Not a Hall of Famer, though, is he? No. U.S. Hockey Hall of Famer, but not a Hockey Hall of Famer. Part of me wants to go to the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, though part of me would get disappointed, I'm sure.
I feel like I would be vastly disappointed there.
I'm sure the museum isn't that great.
Yeah. Although I'd show up and be like, can I look at your archives?
Sure. Yeah, you'd do the complete opposite thing.
Yeah.
So.
6 hours later, you're like, Jen, we really know. We have
Jen
to.
Evan Leth doesn't have anything for me. There's nothing here. There's not even a Hardee's. This is garbage. Can we go now? We got a big ride of nothing to look forward to get back home.
Well, no, you would have a big giant ride of like earplugs stuffed in your ears as I like talk nonstop.
Oh, that's when Hip Hop Nation goes to like 45, and then I'm listening to Lil Pump and Gucci Mang. And just like listening to the newest Drake, it's great. Like, and then you're talking about things I don't know.
Talking about like Henry Boucher and how I got to hold one of his sweatbands.
I honestly can't wait until we go to Toronto and you experience the hockey. I'm just gonna
film this whole thing.
You know what, Jen? I'm just gonna hang out here and I'll be in the merch area. I'm gonna go play with and just have hockey pucks shot at me.
Get a call. Sir, does this one belong to you?
Yeah, I'll get a DM from Phil Pritchard. I'm like, what? He's broke in again. Oh, all right. So that's Laffy Taffy.
Yeah. So that's what I've got. Now it's your turn.
Yeah, no, that's what I was putting the pause in there for. And then we can, so I edit. Scott, cut this out. Or don't. I don't care. I'm not your supervisor. This week we said so, see you later to our buddy Jason Hajdu.
One of those Ukrainian names.
Kind of weird.
Yeah.
Sounds almost like Scandinavian. But he is on to the city of Kansas, I think. I don't know. He's going to Kansas. I don't know.
Kansas City. Yeah.
But he's in Kansas City. Kansas or Kansas City, Missouri? That we don't know.
I want to say Kansas.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
So he's gone. What was he? 16 years he was SID at North Dakota?
Oh, he was there for a long time.
Yeah, I think 23 total, perhaps.
Yep, because he started. He was already a grad student hire when I worked there in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
He'd already been there like a year or two, so yeah.
So yeah, he's been there long, long years. So much so the NCAA give him props for his.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's done a lot, and
well, he's the one who innovated like the behind these doors type stuff
to create that and to come up with a behind the scenes thing, and to run something like this is akin to running an NHL team, I would think. In terms of media relations and what you have to do with, because North Dakota is pretty much unlike a lot of programs out there, with the exception of maybe Minnesota
or Boston,
maybe Boston U. But the scope. Well, because I think it's bigger because I think this is the biggest. Is the Ralph the biggest arena?
Yeah.
In NCAA,
I think so. Yeah, because it's almost it's not quite NHL size, but it's like AHL size.
It's 11,000 plus. I think 11,006 maybe.
Something like that. Yeah.
With standing room. Yeah. So, and I mean, to run a team like this with the prestige that North Dakota's has, like his, like.
And he's got to work with these guys who are going on to the NHL, mm-hmm. and he's got to work with these guys who are going on, a couple of who are going on to, like, the NFL, and.
Yeah, because, you know, and for a while there, he did, like, volleyball and track and field and stuff like that, yep. So. Like to wrangle that and everything like that, it was quite impressive because in this town it's hockey.
Yeah.
You go 75 miles south, it's football, but here it's hockey.
Yep.
So I mean, he did a bang up job. We worked with him. This would have been our third full year, I believe.
Yep.
So and then we worked with him in the past before, and you work with him directly. I work with him indirectly, kind of, and then.
My first day working in the athletic department was the day that Mike Green played for the Oilers. Anyway, it was a Green who, Matt Green, who he got pulled over for a DUI mm-hmm. while he was out fishing, and because he was this big touted draft pick. Everybody was calling. The CBC was calling. Yeah. You know, and it was my job and Jason's department. And I worked for the compliance department. So they would call us for a statement as well. And they would call them for a statement. And that was the first thing I learned was like how to be very polite and firm. Like, mm-hmm. there will be a statement at 2 p.m. Thank you for calling. Click. Mm-hmm. You know, like we were not taking questions at this time. Thank you for calling. Click. You know, mm-hmm. and Jason really sort of was like, "Listen, it'll be fine.
Here's how you deal with this."
Yeah, yeah.
Nah, good dude. It's gonna be a miss for sure. But you got the Mitch Wigness coming in,
yeah.
Who seems, from by all accounts, seems kind of like the same. Maybe not as outgoing, but kind of as level-headed and
yeah.
At ease
he's a
it.
Very focused, but
did you work with Mitch too?
Not as much. No.
No.
No. Although he thought it was hilarious when I hung up on the provost or the president.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he's got that going for him.
Yeah, Haji helped us get back in the NHL draft, so that helped too.
Yeah.
And hearing what they might have had in store for him this year, oh, kind of sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's on to bigger and better things. And he's doing it for a good thing because Amanda's doing stuff now.
Yeah. I mean, his wife's worked in athletics for a long, long time too, but they decided that, you know, it was only fair that she got the
big job now.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, mm-hmm. and he was joking about how this was the last time he's going to wear a suit.
Yeah, for a while.
Yeah, so he can just sit around the house wearing those WWE t-shirts we gave him.
Of course, yeah. Hopefully he has we should have bought him a pair of Zubaz pants to go with it.
We
and
should.
A fanny pack. Listen, live out your dream as like a retired indie wrestler. The Hodge.
We should have.
So, this weekend was kind of whatever with Denver in town. 4-1 win one night and then just the weird, stupid Saturday night game.
Last night's game was so weird. I just kept
Saturday
zoning.
Nights. Just was Monday, Jen. Remember? Wink.
Yes. The Saturday night's game, I just sort of zoned out. Like, I just kept like, huh? Oh, there's action going on. And then repeat process.
There was a goal scored a minute 10 into the game. And then there wasn't another goal until 2:30 left in regulation. And then there was another goal until 20 seconds left in overtime. And it's just like that last 3 minutes of the gameplay in the regulation and then the overtime was pretty exciting. Everything else was like freaking quicksand. It's the worst. I think.
I keep feeling like I'm watching midget hockey.
Brad Schlossman of the Grand Forks Herald said on Friday's game, UND only had 3 shots in the last 32 minutes of play. In the game, on Saturday night's game, it was Denver had only 1 shot in 15 minutes of play. It's like,
and it was like a goal. It was a goal too.
Yeah,
they had like 1 shot and it was a goal.
Yeah,
and I'm just like, what? how
fury. It was hate, and they're like, oh, it's a neutral zone game, two powerful teams. Like, yeah, guess what, get better. The skaters aren't as good as we thought they were gonna be.
No. And the players that were supposed to be like the big power players now are
hurt.
They're hurt, or they're
subpar at best. When the lights shine on them, they can't get to it.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. I don't know. I always hope that someone's going to find it. Like, one of the guys will find out the path.
Yeah.
There's a couple of them that can really find their way.
Like, Docker, I can see he's like, slowly moving there.
Docker's kind of almost Tucker Pullman 2.0.
Almost, yeah.
I would. I don't think he's as defensively liable as Willannon was, because I didn't like Willannon. Willannon jumped up a lot but didn't come back.
Yeah.
Docker's at least somewhat good in his own zone.
Well, Docker's very observant, too, and that helps. My bigger complaint, one of my bigger complaints about Docker is that, you know, you're not Ovi. You can't slap a bomb from near the same point, near the blue line, every time. Like,
their power play is infuriating to me.
Yeah, it's killing me.
They have too many guys on their own wings, and they don't switch up for a one-timer. They just sit there and just, like, yeah, no wonder, like, guys are being able to get out to the point. They're smothering you.
Yeah.
You don't have guys on your off wing.
Yeah.
But, man, it's
kinda, they don't push back either. No. Like if they're standing in front of the net and they're getting pushed, they don't push back. Yeah. They just stand there. Like,
well, a lot of their guys aren't that big. Like, they don't have the, like, Cole Smith is it. Nick Jones will take a beating. Same with Gardner, but
yeah,
nobody else is gonna take a lick and keep on ticking.
Oh.
So first half's over. They're 9-6-2 or 3 or something.
Something like that.
Not terrible.
No. Not great.
Not great. Not UND great.
If they keep playing like this, they're going to have a very short postseason.
It's going to be another aren't they going to in the tournament.
Yeah, that's what it's going to come down to.
Which, you know, we should decide if we want to go to Fargo for the quarters or not.
You mean with the giant flat screen TVs?
Hmm?
With their giant flat screen TVs instead of Jumbotron?
Listen, I love it when people are standing in my way in press row and then a guy's offering us alcohol, trying to get us to the fucking game. I love that part about... And that wasn't even at the NCAA game. That was at the AHL game that we went to.
Yeah.
So it's just like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, because they have press rows stuck between, like, regular rows of seating.
Yeah, between the club seating and then the regular, lower bowl.
They just took, like, a row of club seating and went, this is press row now.
Yeah, for everything. Like, that's just, and then it stops.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, there was a rope that said, do not enter. Yeah, that'll keep people out.
It's this amazing setup, and we'll have to, I don't know, we'll have to put up a video or something.
Yeah.
On the Patreon.
We should do that.
Yeah, we haven't been to a Fargo game in a while.
No, we haven't. I want them to come. I would love to see if Johnstown come, or not Johnstown, Youngstown,
because
that's the one that Murray owns, and he owns the Black Bears.
Okay.
So, I don't think they don't come to town this year or much at all, because again, East Coast, West Coast kind of thing.
Right.
But yeah, that's that. Yeah, we should see if the Force are playing anytime soon, and maybe go down to a game or whatever. Shields Arena's a nice arena. It's just the sight lines are garbage. It's the only problem with it.
Well, that and the screen, like the
Jumbotron, like it's a screen that's an SD that's trying to be HD.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre.
It's I don't even know how I describe it. Like, I have to show you photos cuz it's
weird.
Yeah, it's like, well, this 46-inch screen up here in the girders is going to be fine for replays.
I got a bigger one in my house.
That kind of thing gets chilled out. All right, should we get to some cards to end out?
We should, even though I probably won't know much of anything.
That's fine. We'll do a little rapid fire. Sean Burr.
Sean Burr. When he was first diagnosed with cancer, they actually broke one of the needles trying to get a biopsy. And he was joking his butt was so thick and hard from sitting on the bench for so long. So, you know, that's the kind of guy he was.
Steve Duchesne.
I don't think I have anything.
Okay. Seabass, Cam Neely.
A reporter said to him, so now that you're retired, even though you're retiring, I'm going to call you every day and ask how your knee is. And Cam replied, I hope you don't mind calling Hawaii every day.
Randy Leducer.
No.
One of the first Anaheim Mighty Ducks. He was the first Anaheim Mighty Duck that had... Nope, that's a lie. It was Bob Corkum. I get him and Randy. Randy Leducer was on the starting line for the Mighty Ducks for NHL 94. Vlashislav Fatisov.
Probably, I don't think I have anything that isn't already out there because the Russian Five have been covered to death.
Star rookie Rob Stauber.
Rob Stauber, who runs a goalie store and training clinic
in Bloomington, yeah.
Yeah.
The St. Paul, the Twin Cities metro area.
Yeah.
Really nice place.
It is, and their guy was super helpful because... Like, I was looking for gear, and it was all obviously out of my price range, but he was super helpful anyway. Like, oh, you need these size pads. And
right, sizing you up and things like that. Just making sure you had the right fit.
Yeah.
That was cool. It was cool of him.
Yeah, because he didn't have to, because he obviously wasn't going to make a sale.
Sure.
So
I bought a t-shirt.
And I bought a hat.
Yep. Yeah. Randy Burridge.
Nothing.
Generic name Jeff Brown. Now I got a four card. Olin Nolan, Keith Primeau, Mike Ricci, and Trevor Linden?
I don't know.
Peter Nedved. So it's Olin Nolan, Peter Nedved, Keith Primeau, Mike Ricci in the top four draft pick card.
Oh yeah. I was gonna say it must be a draft pick card.
Mm-hmm. And Olin Nolan's the only one wearing a hat.
Olin Nolan, the only player born in North Ireland.
Peter Nedved, Canadian citizen, fully for the Canadian national team after defecting.
Yes, he did. And he did so deliberately too. Mm-hmm. That was his plan.
He was the one who went to the Calgary police station during the Max Midget tournament.
Yeah, he had like $3 in his pocket.
Yeah. A collector's choice edition, an art form of Jeremy Roenick. I always love these cards in the Upper Deck one. You do a little art piece.
When he first went to the Blackhawks, they wouldn't let him live by himself. Like, his parents wouldn't let him live by himself, and the team wouldn't let him live by himself.
Hmm. There's something there. Another thing is that he showed up to camp wearing a visor, and he overheard Keenan saying his dislike of people with visors, immediately took it off. Never wore it again.
Yeah, which is dumb, but...
Mm. You know, gotta impress people. John Drews.
Mr. What do they call him?
Mr. Postseason?
Something, yeah, like Mr. April or something. Like Mr.
April May.
Yeah.
Because, man, it wasn't until last year that his Caps playoff points record was broken. It was because of Ovechkin and because they played freaking 20-some games finally.
Yeah.
For the first time since 98. And dumb neck roll Rick Vive. Look at that damn, like a freaking linebacker, this guy.
Yeah.
I don't like, Joey Mullen wore one of those too, and I don't understand why.
Was it to
keep it, to keep, so if you get hit, you don't have the whiplash effect?
Yeah, I don't know.
Mm. All right, nothing from Rick Vive?
Don't
be killing my vibe.
Sorry, I just sniffled into them.
Yeah, you're getting sick again. Odds are we're probably not going to do a show next week.
I'm going to be wearing face masks. Rick Five was the first 50-goal scorer for the Leafs.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So, 50 goals in a season. First one.
Oh, what is this?
That's always a good sign.
I have a blank card. Oh, no, it's a... who the hell is this? Is this a Mark Messier? Can't tell who this is. I think it's a Mark Messier hologram card. Look at that. It's a little hologram card. How about that?
Who the hell are you supposed to tell how that is?
Because I saw an Oilers jersey and I saw number 11.
And there's a C on it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's Messier. Okay, so here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go on a rant for a second.
All right.
People are yelling about how...
Get this over here.
Tom Wilson's a dirty player and blah, 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 blah. Okay.
A couple good ones here.
Mark Messier... once high-sticked one of the Stutters in the mouth so viciously, the dude spent like 4 to 6 hours in an oral surgeon's chair, having his upper mouth and his teeth reconstructed and splinters and bits of hockey tape removed from his mouth because they were embedded in. You know how much Mark Messier got for that?
Six games.
Two minutes.
Mm, that was close.
So I'm just saying, you know, it's not just...
Different times. PC! Maybe it's cold outside. It's offensive. Can't say Merry Christmas. Libs, right? Huh? Yeah. High five. High five me on that. All right. Thanks, Jen.
You're all my witnesses.
Yep. She high five me. She's right. Pwn the libs. Anyway, folks. Rob Ramage.
Nah.
Theo?
No, because he's put so much out there about himself that there's nothing worth.
Dumb hat Darian Hatcher. Which is like on his little like perm fro.
He had this thing about wearing chinos. I don't know what it is, but like the khaki,
yeah,
like,
no, that's
like golf
odd,
pants.
Yeah, that's an odd fact.
Well, like most pictures I find of him doing Dallas Stars stuff, he's wearing these freaking chinos, and
well,
I'm like,
trying to evolve in the area.
I'm like, okay, Dad.
Anything on Wayner that we don't know?
On who?
Oh, Wayne Gretzky. The thing that you told me you mentioned last night.
Oh, okay. So here's a plug for something else I was on. There is a show called Jesse Spector is on Lightning Power Play Radio. And you can Google it and find it. And we were talking about Indiana hockey history. And anyway, to get to the end of it, I was talking about how Gretzky was afraid of flying. And so when they were flying from Indianapolis to Edmonton, he's sitting there in the jump seat, like all sweaty and green. And he's like surrounded himself with hockey sticks, like it's some sort of magic talisman. Like he's just like built himself a little stick fort and he's all sweaty. And
wow.
And then one of the players involved in the trade happened to be Eddie Mio, who ended up being Gretzky's best friend and his best man at his wedding. And somebody asked him when the plane landed. Somebody asked Eddie, "So what's it like playing with that? What do you think it's going to be like playing with Gretzky?" And he said, "Ask Gretzky what it's going to be like playing with me."
There you go. Ron Tugnutt.
The vote for Tugnutt campaign still one of my favorite things.
Yeah, when he was with the Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
His faux presidential campaign.
And he actually got a whole bunch of write-ins, too.
Of course he is, because Ohio's are idiots. Phil Housley.
Phil Housley. I don't know if there's much.
He's a very...
he's a pretty private guy.
Private guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Doug Crossman.
Nah.
Brian Propp.
Brian Propp. He's a realtor now.
Got knocked the F out by Chelios, too.
Yes. Yeah, he's the one who started that whole shenanigans.
Ronnie Franchise. See? That's another Francis name we call Franchise.
Yes.
That's why we call Oliver that.
That's why you guys call Oliver that.
It's the Franchise.
I don't do it because I know I'll slip up and call it to his face. And
we did. Schlossman did it in front of Colton Pullman, and Pullman laughed directly at him. He's like, Franchise, nice.
Except I wouldn't say it as nicely as Brad does, so.
He's like, hey, Franchise, get in here with the microphone. You don't have to be creeping back there. That's what he said when the press conference started. I have it on tape.
That's fantastic. Ron Francis, another very private player. Very, very private guy.
We've killed Mark off to death. Stan Smeal.
Vancouver favorite.
Yeah.
Except for that one time. But, his wife.
My wife?
So he was captain. And when Larionov came in. Mm-hmm. And the team came to him and said, listen, you know, we've got this Russian player. We want you to help him settle in and all of these things. So his wife took Larionov's wife shopping. And they got to the meat section. And Larionov's wife just started throwing meat in the cart left, right, and center like it was some sort of like...
It was supermarket sweep and she had to get the highest dollar value.
Yeah. And Stan's wife said, "What are you doing?" And Larionov's wife said, "Well, the meat is here. I have to get the meat while it's here. It's right here. I have to get it now." And Stan's wife said, "No, it'll still be here tomorrow. Like, you don't need this much. It'll be here tomorrow." And Larionov's wife was like, no, I have to, it's here now. I have to get it now." And so they made a deal. She could have like half the meat that she'd thrown in the cart. And they would come back tomorrow.
And she would see that the meat's still there.
Yes.
And
yeah. So, yeah.
That tells you, man.
That really tells you something about where they were coming from. So, yeah.
Speaking of coming from, Peter Klima. Peter effing Klima with that dumb Yoffa helmet that I love so much.
There's this great headline that I love it because the headline is something like, a teenage sensation Klima can't decide if he likes pizza or hockey better.
What is this, Teen Vogue? What the hell's going on? Frick just happened. My God. All right, well, that'll end on a high note there. Not Dan, but a high note nonetheless.
Dan Highnote, who's ended up being featured in an article in Playboy?
Really?
Something like that, yeah. Hmm. It was about like hockey player houses or something. It wasn't anything like
anything fancy.
Anything fancy or smutty or anything.
Mm, sadly. All right, where can they find your babble?
NHL History Girl.
You can find my babble at Scotty Waz. Find the show babble at SDR Strong Bubble. We don't do much except promote our show. The Patreon, patreon.com/faceoffhockeyshow. We're doing things, Jen. Doing things. Why do I have Laffy? Oh, that's right. We talk about Taffy Abel. Like, why the hell do I have the Laffy Taffy song on? And I guess the question after that is, why don't I have it up at all times? I make pills for that. Dangly Barts. We're doing things on the Patreon, doing a weekend preview thing. Weekend that was. And see, get it? Because it's punny, but yeah. There's a comma.
Yes.
Comma. Comma chameleon. You could be like Chris and Matthew and Damon and Mark and Trista. Brian, Angela, Sean, Jeff, Kevin, Mitch, Ethan, all those people contribute. You can too. Patreon.com/faceoff. I can show you, get all the fun stuff. And one of these days when we do our extra show, we'll have to do your stories from the athletic department.
Oh, God.
Because the Taves stories is the best. Like, all the stories you have of these future NHLers are fantastic. So
being dumb as bricks.
Oh, just idiots. Just dummies. And then friggin' Brad Barry busting into the office like you busted into the Faceoff Hockey Show last week. Just like Kramer. Like, ah!
Every day, man.
Levels, Jerry.
Every
Levels.
Day.
All right. That's it. That's all. For Jen, I'm Scott. Take care of yourself and someone else. This has been the Sidestream Bubble and the Faceoff Hockey Show media faction powered by Blog Talk Radio. We'll talk to you when we talk to you next. So subscribe. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the like 5-star. Woo! Patreon. I forget to do all that like during... like. Yeah. Should do that during the show rather than at the end when everyone's clicked off. Uh-huh. Now what can you do? All right. Bye, everybody.